The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Good morning, Anthony Reich. How are you?
Boker Tov Moedim Simcha. How are you guys doing, Kathy?
Yeah, very well. We're just talking about this woman from the UAE. She was in a traffic accident in 1991 trying to save her child from being hit by a bus. Turns out she was hit by the bus. Severe brain injuries. And she's been in a coma since 1991, 27 years. She woke up 2 days ago. And
I heard about this. Someone said that she missed social media. I don't think she did, actually.
Yeah, she missed how toxic we've become. But wow. She missed Y2K. She missed, you know, 9-11.
Yeah, I don't think she missed much there either. 9-11.
She missed 9-11. Which means that Barack, you know, Osama bin Laden would mean nothing to her. She missed Barack Obama. She woke up to Trump. It's a completely different world. There was no email or internet.
There's no doubt that it's a completely different world, but in my view, she hasn't missed out on a great deal in many of these things. I mean, some of the things that we've been subject to over the last 20 or 30 years, I could easily have done without, to be honest.
Yes, you're right. You're absolutely right. Lee, one of our listeners, actually said the only thing she's really missed, the only important thing she missed out on was her son growing up, and that's absolutely
Which
true.
I think is a fair comment. I think that's kind of, you know, becoming very soft and cuddly and very true. I mean, the world is an entirely different world. And you know, you and I and people of a similar age, dare I put you into this sort of similar age category to me, Kathy. We think about, you know, when we were teenagers and we didn't have email and we didn't have SMSs and WhatsApp and we didn't have mobile phones.
We had time, Anthony. We cloud watched.
We did, and we had ticky boxes, you know, where we had to make our phone calls. Who ever heard of a public payphone these days? You know, why would you need one?
Absolutely, absolutely. All right, let's move on to some other news. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has announced that he intends to call a town in the Golan Heights after U.S. President Donald Trump. What is he going to – hold on. Is he going to call it Donaldville?
Well, I was actually going to open this up to the
listeners
to make some suggestions.
Okay, so make some suggestions.
What the town in the Golan might be called after U.S. President Donald Trump. And this came, this announcement came yesterday when the Netanyahu family was actually holidaying over Pesach in the Golan Heights. And the prime minister decided that he thought it would be appropriate to call a town in the Golan after U.S. President Donald Trump. Obviously, in recognition of President Trump's decision to recognize the Golan as part of Israel's sovereign area. And so this is a kind of a thank you, I would say, to the U.S. president after he brought, you know, the sovereignty forward and he signed the official declaration. And we all saw the scenes in the White House when Prime Minister Netanyahu was there and President Trump decided that it was time that the Golan formally be recognized as part of Israel, sovereign Israel. And so Prime Minister Netanyahu said that he's going to bring this before the Knesset in the near future. That's going to be an interesting one. Not before the Knesset, I'm sorry, before the government, assuming he has one in the near future. And he is going to have a town in the Golan named after President Trump. So I would definitely like to hear people giving some suggestions as to what they might call this town, bearing in mind that this would not be the first place in Israel that's named after a U.S. president. We do have a place called Kfar Truman, which is actually a moshav, not far from Ben Gurion Airport. And this is a moshav that was set up back in 1949 and was named after U.S. President Harry Truman, who, of course, had very much supported the establishment of the State of Israel. In return, he was recognized in this moshav called Kfar Truman. So what do you think the town in the Golan might be called after President Trump?
Ah, okay. Suggestion coming through on site. Okay.
I can tell what's going to happen here, right?
I love you. Dorf says Kofifi. Do you remember Kofifi?
Okay.
Rachari says Trump Heights. Ansan says he should call it Trumple Win.
Mm-hmm. Trump Heights is Ramak Trump in Hebrew.
Okay, there we go. How about Melech, Aluf, or Ein Od Milvado.
Okay.
Mount Hermon, or Hermon is becoming Trump Heights, the crown of Trumpville.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Interesting.
Keep them coming.
Well,
we
will see how that goes, but I mean, this is just, you know, just another step, towards, you know, Israel's, increasingly close relationship, I would say, with the U.S. administration, with Donald Trump in particular. And, you know, as we discussed yesterday, not particularly helpful in trying to, create a closer relationship between the U.S. administration and the Palestinian Authority. And of course, this would just be one step closer towards a complete breakdown of that relationship, if, you know, you consider that it exists at all at the moment. But just onto the Prime Minister's holiday, he was in the Golan, he was with his children, Avner and Yair, and of course his wife Sarah, and they were greeting people. They went for a tiyul along one of the riverbed, along the rivers, and they went to what they call Kfar Nachum, which is Capernaum in English, in the Galil area. And he visited some of the fortresses. Apparently they even rode jeeps, and there are pictures of him on Mount Hermon with all the snow in the background. So he's really traveling around a lot in the north of Israel over Pesach, dressed up in winter coats, which is very unseasonal, but that's just the way it is. And apparently all the holidaymakers up in the north were very much welcoming of Prime Minister Netanyahu, and very excited to see him and his family out and about, like many of the rest of Israel are doing at the moment.
Fantastic. Let's take a look at some other stories. Benjamin Netanyahu has praised U.S. President Donald Trump for tightening U.S. sanctions against those bullying oil or buying oil from Iran. Well, South Africa is one of those as well.
Well, there was actually some sort of an exemption that was granted to sanctions to a group of countries. I didn't see South Africa as one of those countries who was granted these waivers by the U.S. government at the time that the sanctions against Iran were implemented, and also sanctions against those countries buying oil from Iran. But the waivers were granted to China, India, Japan, South Korea, Taiwan, Turkey, Italy, and Greece, as far as I'm aware. So South Africa, not one of those countries. But now that that waiver period is coming to an end at the end of May, I understand, or sometime during the course of May, the U.S. government has decided that it will not be renewing the waiver, those waivers for those countries, and that those countries will also become subject to sanctions by the U.S. government in the event that they buy oil from Iran. That's kind of, you know, really, really tightening up on these sanctions and making it even more difficult for Iran to sell their oil. As it is, we understand that the number of barrels a day that Iran is currently selling has been reduced from something like 2.5 million barrels a day down to something like 1 million barrels a day being sold by the Iranian regime. So it's less than half of what they were selling before. In tandem with that, the U.S. government agreed with Saudi Arabia that it would increase its production of oil in order to make sure that there wasn't a huge shortage of oil on the international markets, thereby increasing the price of oil. And of course, along with it, all kinds of other price increases, which generally are accompanied with an increase in the price of oil. So the Saudi Arabian government, and indeed other OPEC countries, have been somewhat cooperative with the U.S. government. And don't let's forget that there's also been this issue of Venezuela, that the sanctions have been imposed on Venezuela, and Venezuela is also a significant oil producer. And so, you know, there's been an attempt to make sure that there isn't this huge shortage in the market for oil as a result of the sanctions. But it seems as if, though, the U.S. government is very, very intent upon imposing huge additional sanctions upon Iran. Having said that, I was interested to read that a special U.S. special representative, Brian Hook, is a special representative for Iran, and he has said that the U.S. is actually looking to sign a new agreement with Iran that will cover its nuclear and missile programs, and will also cover trying to take control of the country's aggression in the region, and I'm guessing will also have to incorporate some sort of a clause about the Iranian oil industry. And so it's interesting that on the one hand, the U.S. government is saying they're going to impose further sanctions on countries that are buying oil from Iran. But on the other hand, the special representative to Iran is saying that actually the U.S. government is interested in entering into some sort of a wide-ranging agreement with Iran. So we'll just have to see how that pans out. But in the meantime, of course, to the extent that Iran continues to fund terrorism and fund Hezbollah and fund Hamas and fund all manner of other activities, terror activities, not only in the region but further afield. Israel welcomes the sanctions that are imposed upon Iran, because obviously it makes it much more difficult for Iran to fund these terror activities going forward, and that's going to be certainly helpful. Apparently, Iran is giving Hezbollah something like $700 million a year out of Hezbollah's budget, would you believe, of $1 billion. It's like it's a country sort of budget. It's got a budget of $1 billion, and something like 70% of that is coming from Iran. So hopefully this will weaken Hezbollah along with other terror activities in the process of the sanctions being imposed.
All right, Anthony, I don't want to run out of time. A British Member of Parliament, I spoke about this yesterday, he tweeted a video that he said it was terrible, and was how the IDF soldiers are abusing and beating up Palestinian children. Turns out that the video is from Guatemala. And the issue that I had, that after 1,000 people had told him on the tweet that it was not a real story, that it was actually something that happened in Guatemala, he still left it up. What's happened with this?
Well, it's a joke, actually. I mean, this is British Labour MP Graham Morris, and he actually shared a video which was taken back in 2015, and as you rightly point out, it shows Guatemalan soldiers abusing a child, and of course he immediately jumps to the conclusion, as is often the case, isn't it? When you see soldiers dressed up in fatigues abusing a child, of course it must be the IDF, right? According to the current international storyboards that we see in the international press. But fortunately, Graham Morris has been forced to eat humble pie and to apologize. And he actually said, "I'm sorry for sharing a post which purports to show the idea of hurting children, but in fact it was the Guatemalan army." And then he went to blame it on fake news. "My error demonstrates the dangers of fake news online," and he will be more diligent, apparently. Mm. But then he went on to say, despite all of this,
He
goes on to say, there are lots of verifiable, documented examples of the IDF abusing Palestinian child prisoners. Oh. "I have seen for myself," he said. Even though he's apologizing, it's a very much kind of guarded apology, which is not really an apology, because having apologized for the particular mistake, he then goes on to say, "But I still believe that IDF soldiers abuse Palestinian children, and nothing will change my view on that." That's effectively what he's saying. A real joke, and unfortunately, this is the image that Israel has in the international press, and if only people knew how gentle and how seriously the IDF takes treatment of not only Palestinians in general, but particularly
It's the world's most
compassionate
children. Anthony, we've got to get to news. But I mean, is that not the greatest irony? The world's most compassionate army, it is known to be the world's most compassionate army, is accused of beating children.
That's the joke, unfortunately, and it just really represents a situation which is entirely untrue. And for the listeners out there who might think that there is an element of truth to some of these horrible claims that are made in the press, it just isn't true. It really just isn't true. And, you know, we've got so many ways of proving that. So I'm going to leave you go to news now, and we will talk again tomorrow. I hope that you enjoy your day. And we will talk about things tomorrow again.
Very, very quickly, your CV suggests Golan Towers for the Golan.
Mm-hmm.
Mark
okay.
says, "Will the exit to Trump's new town have a sign, 'You're fired'?" My Trump card from Anthony in Benoni. Donaldtopia from Steve G. And Mike Luba says, "If Trump gets his own town, will he pay for a new wall along the Syrian-Lebanon border?" Well, there we go. So, Anthony, everybody
have a good day, guys.
Playful. Have a good day. God bless. Bye-bye.